This is HPR episode 2281 entitled HPR Community News for April 2017 and is part of the series HPR Community News. It is hosted by HPR volunteers and is about 92 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is HPR volunteers talk about shows released and comments posted in April 2017.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Hacker Public Radio. This is the community news show for the month of April. Ken always has problems with this. I can see why, because there's a lot of months floating around in front of me here. Anyway, tonight, Ken is not available, so I thought I was going to have to do this on my own, and you will be delighted to know that I don't have to, because I have two friends to come and help out. We have tonight Christopher Hobbs. Say hello, Christopher.
Hello, Christopher.
And we have JWP. Would you like to go by JWP, by the way?
Yes. Hello, JWP here.
Thank you very much for joining me and to help out with this fun event. So the first thing we do is to speak about new hosts this month, and we've had two. We have FTH and VNAM, I think is the way you pronounce his name. So we'll be getting around to looking at their shows as we go along. So the agenda is we'll go through all the various shows that have been broadcast or come out on the feed this past month, and we will be looking at any comments that have been made to them. Then we'll check any other comments, and then we'll look at email in that period. So the first show for April was the last community news. And normally we don't say much about the last community news because it gets very recursive if we do, but we had some comments on this one. And we had one from JWP, do you care to read out your comment to this? Have you got it in front of you, JWP?
I have the website in front of me, Dave, but it says HPR volunteers is the host, and so I'll just click on it to see the comments.
It's okay. What I normally do, what Ken and I normally do, because we've been doing this for a while now, so it's just sort of a habit more than anything else, is the notes that will go out with this show contain links to each of the shows, so you can follow through to the show. I've got mine open up in another tab so that I can just look at the comments to it. But if you manage to find where we are, then let me know and I'll hand over to you to do a bit of reading if you feel like it. But otherwise, I'll just go ahead with these, yeah? So the comment on the last community news show from JWP was one button submit, where he asked, how do you upload the voice memo of an iPhone to HPR? I'm a fan of one button upload. Then the next comment was myself, not relevant to JWP's comment, where I was simply remarking on the fact that during the show we spoke of the amateur radio roundtable. And I forgot to mention a podcast episode that I'd heard recently, and the podcast is called Exposing Pseudo-Astronomy, and the guy was talking about the subject of radiation. And to my mind, he did a really good job of explaining this subject, and I put a link to it and the feed if you're interested. So if you don't quite get what radiation means in the sense of, you know, is X-ray radiation, is cosmic rays radiation, etc. He's an astronomer and he did a brilliant job of explaining it, I thought. The third comment was from Ken Fallon, replying to JWP's comment, where he says, one button will not fix the steady supply problem. Hi, JWP. Yes, it would be nice if we could have a one-button record function, but it will only benefit the seasoned contributors like yourself. Most people struggle with having the perfect show and procrastinate about the ums and ors. The last people to use a one-button stroke dial-in option are the exact people we're trying to target. This will not fix the steady supply of shows issue. So, a comment, I think. So, pushing on to show 2262, we had Eric Duhamel with the show entitled Abstracting Nurse Jesus. So, as I understood this, he was largely talking about his random number generator in a game, I think, that he's producing. Yes, he's using Pygame to make a game. So he was talking about the random number generator needed to do various things in it. So
I talk to Eric pretty regularly, and if you haven't tried his little Python games, they're a lot of fun. I don't mean to be demeaning to call it little Python games, but they're very simple and quite enjoyable to play. It's been a lot of fun listening to him explain his thought process with building these things. It's a pretty good episode, I think.
Yeah, I've seen him mention it on GNU Social, because he's on there as well, but I've not really followed it up. It sounds worth a check.
Yeah, it's quite fun. It's feels like a mix between a dungeon crawler to some degree and Pac-Man. I don't know quite
how
to explain it.
That's an interesting combination. Okay, let's get on. Go ahead.
I was going to say the name of it is Labyrinth of the Dead.
Cool. Okay, I'll check that out. So I was going to push on to show 2263, which is Freak Does Geek by FTH, one of our new hosts. Now, this was a very unusual and interesting show. He was out with his friend, his friend Hugh. I had made a note of it. And they were on the bus, I think having dropped their kids off, and were talking about various things. And they had some fascinating things to discuss. And Hugh is visually impaired, so his insight to these various things were quite amazing. It was a fascinating show, I thought.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this one as well. I used to build interfaces for the blind, and it was neat to hear their descriptions of his perception of, you know, the world around him, especially after having, I believe he was previously sighted. And so
yes, I think so, yes. He's lost most of his sight, I believe, in a fairly recent past. But it was very interesting. They were talking about tape recorders, cassette tape recorders, the sort of portable one, which was interesting in itself. And it's just quite an interestingly broad discussion of things related to audio matters on the bus. And you could hear the ambient sounds of the bus in the background, which I always like to have these sort of scene-setting noises in the background.
Absolutely. And I hope they do another episode. I especially learned a little bit about MP3. I don't think I knew any of the history about it, and so it was nice to get that lesson rolled in with the nice audioscape as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We had one comment on this show, which was from Beza, who said, brilliant show. I rarely listen to an HBR episode which I don't find interesting to some extent. However, this one excelled in that just about everything was new to me. Perspective of a visually impaired person of how the world looks, in quotes, was both rare and fascinating. It would do all of us good to be reminded that the world is not perceived by everyone the same way. I do hope that you produce some more shows soon, which I completely agree with.
I thought the comment was really nice.
Yeah.
Good comment.
Yes, indeed. It's good. Again, as we've said before, getting some sort of supportive comments on, especially on the first show that's been submitted to HPR is a great thing, you know, and just to say welcome on board or whatever it is. So, yeah, that was a good comment, I thought. So moving on, show 2264 at the library by Bill NFMZ1 Miller. So he was talking about his local library and the features that it offers. It was really, I personally found this great. I've been a great believer in libraries all my life, really. The picture that he painted was sounded as if libraries are still going strong, particularly in his part of the world, at least. So that's good.
As an American living in Germany, the German government in Karlsruhe kept one of the American army libraries open and active, and so they do everything pretty much that Bill was talking about in his podcast. But in particularly when it's closed on the weekends, they still keep the stairwell open so you can drop off and donate whatever you want, and then they sell it on eBay to sort of keep the library going at the city. But it's really amazing what you can do, and in particular, a lot of libraries help with homelessness in the States with internet access and such things, so that people can apply for jobs and get off the streets in the States. So libraries are still pretty important in today's society.
Absolutely, yes. It's good that they still exist in the sort of traditional way. It got me thinking about using my local library. I used to when my kids were small. They're in their 20s now, so we tend not to be at the library much. And I went to the local library and made sure my library card was renewed so I can go and make use of it when I get a chance. So, yeah, thanks, Bill, for that heads up.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And you mentioned for traditional things, but it's important to note too, which he underscores, that libraries have much more than just traditional things. One of my local libraries offers baking sheets and fishing poles for checkout. So I'm a huge proponent of libraries and really enjoyed this episode for sure.
Yeah, I'd like to hear what other libraries are doing. That would be an interesting thing because, as you say, there's a lot more to them than there used to be. I think John Culp did a show on going to his library where they had a maker space there that he was using the 3D printer or something like that. So I guess libraries are moving in those sorts of directions, which is wonderful to see. So there were three comments on this show. First one was from Clinton Roy, where he said Podnuts, and he said Podnuts podcast was referenced, and he gave a link to it. He followed up with a second comment. Great idea. I should definitely do this in my library, I think is what he meant to say. Missed a word. But yeah, it's good. Very good. And Windigo said, similar experience. While living on the north coast of California, the library was more than just a repository for paper books. It was essentially a community center. My partner and I attended talks and classes, spent time in between appointments reading, using their Wi-Fi, and borrowed plenty of movies and books from our branch. Libraries are a fantastic resource and seem to be helping the least fortunate in our communities. So, yeah. Okay, show 2265, What OS on Lenovo X61S from Tony Hughes. The e-speak always calls him Akka, which I find amusing. Tony H1212 is his also known as name. So this is Tony with his, I think both John, JWP and I have met Tony because he's always busy at odd camps doing all sorts of things in the background. So, but anyway, he's obviously a guy for a bargain and for obtaining interesting and useful smaller machines. And he's talking about his Lenovo and running What OS on it. Just sounds like a great little machine, I thought.
Yeah, you know, that's an addiction to have those old small things as a Nokia N700 person and a ASUS 701 person. You know, those can be quite addictive and they last forever. They just go on and on and on. They never break. They just continue.
Yeah. It's good to see. I'm all for that myself.
That's one of the beauties of things like GNU Linux and all of these other lower resource consumption distributions. I use a lot of old hardware too. So I started looking into watOS after reading this, and I may give it a shot on a couple of things. But yeah, they're tanks, the old ones are.
Yeah, they're pretty robust machines, aren't they? I don't actually know this one personally, but imagine all of these Lenovos of that era are pretty good machines. So there were no comments on that one. So we'll move on to 2266 game books. So sort of subseries of tabletop gaming, and the game book is Lone Wolf, and this is from Klaatu. So this is about particular type of sort of single person game that you can play with what's effectively a programmed book, from what I understood. I've never seen these. I remember programmed learning books, which are not really very popular these days, but it sounds quite cool actually, that you can sort of roll a set of dice or something, and then use some other sort of random source, and then that tells you how to move forward through the book and so forth. Either of you guys into this sort of thing?
Well, I'm not very familiar with it, but I downloaded the first one after I heard about it. It sounded a lot like a choose your own adventure book, and I enjoyed this episode and his subsequent episode on the topic. I don't know that I have time to do this because my leisure time is spent with other activities, but the 20 or so minutes I spent with Lone Wolf was really cool, and I wish that I had this when I was a lot younger. I probably would have spent a lot of time playing these. They're really neat, especially the one that he mentioned where two people could play simultaneously. I think he called it like the Black Knight and the White Mage. Maybe I'm making that up, but yeah, very interesting.
That's pretty close with what you said. That's pretty close what it was. Somewhere in the neighborhood from that. But yeah, it brought back all kinds of things from my childhood of Dungeons and Dragons and things like this. But I'm like you. I just don't have enough time to really sit down and do that.
No, it's understandable. My daughter's into Dungeons and Dragons. She's at university now, and she and her friends play D&D when they get a chance. And I should point her at least, see if that might be something of interest to her. So she wants to be a dungeon master at some point, so maybe that will give her some clues to doing that. I'm not sure. We had one comment from Les Orchard, who said, "Man, I love these books back in junior high in the 80s. I would usually read or play these in class after I got classwork done. I could sneakily drop a pencil on the random number table and not get in trouble like I did a few times for rolling dice, because I was one of those kids who rolled dice in class." That's a nice story.
I can certainly relate to that one.
yeah, it's good. Okay, let's move on to the next one, 2267 from Sigflup, Our Digital Art. And in this one, she is talking to a friend whose name is Sis, and they are both, and I know Sigflup has schizophrenia and she's talked about it quite a lot. I suspect that her friend does as well, but I can't honestly remember whether that was the case, but they both,
I believe it was mentioned, yeah.
Yes, they're both artists. They both produce some very, very amazing looking pictures, which are available to see on the show notes, and they both produce books of their art, which is quite astonishing actually. I mean huge admiration of people who can do this.
Well, the audio overlay through I think all of her episodes is really cool too. She plays some nice music during the interviews and during her discussions, and I think that really added to their topic, you know, the art of music along with their digital painting.
Yeah. As you say, that I think Sis is into photography as well, I understood right. But yes, it's digital stuff, isn't it? And it's That's also very impressive what you can do with that. I wasn't quite clear how this was done exactly. Did they say? Oh yeah, they said GIMP and things. Was that what was said? Somebody used GIMP, I think.
Yeah, I think Sys used more traditional tools like Adobe products, but the GIMP was used by the host, and she even mentioned that she uses a mouse instead of a tablet, which I thought was fantastic. And they also talked a little bit about using iPads to produce art.
Yeah, that's quite astonishing. My daughter is she's a biology student, but she was in two minds when she went off to university whether she wanted to do art instead. So she does do quite a lot of drawing, and she does digital stuff on an iPad. But she would probably be interested in some of this stuff. I just find it quite an impressive form of art in this way. So there were no comments on that one, so we'll move on to 2268, which is again from Bill MZ1 Miller. And I should do that like I'm in the correct ham radio style, but I don't know. And his show was about fishing, Fish On, he called it. And he was talking about various resources and hints relating to fishing, to planning a fishing trip and that type of thing.
Yeah, he mentioned a lot of good apps. I try to leave my phone behind when I'm fishing, but I think I may have a reason to drag it with me out onto the lake now. But we'll see. I didn't know about most of these. I mean, Google Maps and Google Weather, of course, seem like a lot of people know about. I hadn't considered using them for fishing, but the app for tying braided lines was especially interesting too, because those knots can be tricky.
Yeah, I've not done much fishing in my life. I've done a little bit of what they call coarse fishing. Is that a British term? I'm not sure. You just fish in rivers and that type of stuff. But so only have the tiniest amount of knowledge in this area. But sounds like some amazing facilities there for helping you out.
Yeah, with me here in Germany, I hunt and I do a little bit of fishing, but all of that for me is with a candy bar phone, because the whole idea of it is to be away from electronics.
Yeah, I can understand that. Okay, let's move on to 2269, which is called Chocolate Milk. And this was a show by Vinam, that's how he pronounced it. And it was effectively a syndicated show. The only sort of syndication that we do now is if somebody finds a show or are doing a show for themselves, they can set up an HPR episode where they talk about it to introduce it and so forth. And that's what this was. And the podcast that was being talked about was called Nixers. And there was a whole bunch of things that were being discussed here on quite a nice interview or chat, I suppose. We're talking about buckling spring keyboards and Plan 9 operating system and chocolate milk. So that was good.
I mean, for me, this is Hacker Public Radio right here. When they came up and they started talking about, you know, old keyboards, I used to collect deck keyboards and make them work with PCs and Unix, and then he started talking about chocolate milk, which I'm drinking right now. So
he was really speaking to you there, JWP. That's cool. That's very cool. The keyboard thing fascinated me. I'm quite keen on different types of keyboards. My son, who I don't know how he got into it, is a guy who builds keyboards, and I just happened to have a collection of old keyboards in my house, and he grabbed an IBM Model M type keyboard. Yeah, it's a true IBM. So it's it's a before the Unicomp stuff, which are clones of the Model M. And he completely refurbished it for me. That was my Christmas present. Yeah, refurbished with an 80 mega clone in it to run the keyboard. And obviously it was a PS1 originally, now it's a USB keyboard. I've yet to work out what I can do with it. I'm not using it just at the moment, but I've not got into all of the capabilities of it yet. That's going to be a project for later. But so I really feel for what they're talking about there. That was very cool, I thought.
I'm a Cherry user myself, and it would be neat to see someone do an expanded episode about keyboards. They're really catching on now. And also quite enjoyed this episode because I was a Plan 9 user for a long time. Really enjoy the Acme editor, so it was nice hearing them talk about that too. So yeah, somebody out there should probably do an episode on mechanical keyboards and one on Plan 9 as well.
I would love to learn more about Plan 9. I knew of it, but never experienced it or anything of that sort. And that it sounds really good. Was Dennis Ritchie one of the contributors to Plan 9? I can't remember.
Yeah, he was, along with Rob Pike and that general crew. In fact, I believe Rob Pike contributed the user interface for it. I think it's called Rio.
Right. Yeah. Okay, very cool. Dennis Ritchie used to hang out at the university. He used to visit the university I worked at moderately often, so I've never spoken to him, but I never spoke to him, I should say. But he used to come along to the various Unix user group meetings and that type of stuff. Very impressive guy, pretty amazing. So it's hindsight and all that. It would have been great to have had a chat with him about that. Too late now. But there you go. But a very interesting episode. I would love to hear, must listen to more of these. But as you say, JWP, that sort of content that goes down well on HBR. So there were comments here. Do you want to read out, can you see your own comment, JWP? Do you want to read it out?
Sure, I have it. The first thing I said was great. I really like your talk about Plan 7, the keyboard. I love Loud Clicks 2. And of course, I love chocolate milk. So three gold stars for you. Ken, this is the uber geek stuff that rocks me to the core. And the next one is by a guy named DOD Dummy. And he said, I like the show, but I enjoyed the show, but I'm curious if it counts as a syndicated show not created for HBR. I repeat, I like the show, and in fact, I've added it to my list. And then Ken came with a really long thing as per the summary, a sample show of the Mixers podcast.
He's really reiterating the stuff that I mentioned earlier on about how we don't syndicate them as such, but we do offer people a route to tell the community about other shows. So just save you a bit of reading.
It's interesting because in life, because I gotta do SAP stuff during the day, I only have time for so many, right? And the HPR, so if I have my HPR feed and if I'm listening to Jupiter Broadcasting, their feed, that's about all the tech stuff I'm going to get for the week. And so if they want to mix one of theirs in every once in a while, especially if it's that quality, I'm very good with it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good to, what we used to do in the past was we would syndicate shows so that we would run things like Sunday Morning Linux Review, for example, would pop up every week or every couple of weeks or whatever it was as a syndicated show on HBR. Well, we stopped doing that per se, but a way of just getting shows out there is still open to anybody who wants to do it. So that I think is great. There is Ken mentions that Hacker Media, which is a sister site for HBR, does do syndication of stuff. So he's going to look into whether these sorts of things could be syndicated through that route. Okay, moving on then to show 2270, which was me doing the final episode talking about managing tags on HBR episodes, third in a group. And it was just really how to do database stuff, but trying to make the point that we need to do something relating to tags to make it easier to find related shows on the site or whatever, really to get some discussion going was what it was about.
I'm glad you took the initiative on this one. There was a lot of talk in the past on the mailing list about tags, and I don't think there were a lot of solutions provided, so it was good to see a collection of them spread out. And this, combined with your other database episode, was a really nice sort of abstract dive into some of the capabilities of databases that people might not see often if they use an object relationship mapper or something of that nature. So
yeah, thanks for doing this one. That's a good point, actually. I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, I quite like playing with databases, but I'm just an amateur, really. But I just like it. And yeah, I feel that maybe we should have some shows about the guts of databases, perhaps. But yeah, you're right. The object relational thing hides lots of it away. I don't really like that very much personally, but that's because I'm old and stuck in my ways. So there were a bunch of comments. Sorry, Jay.
I listened, Dave, but after 3 or 4 minutes, you got over my head really, really quickly. But I listened. It was okay for me, but it was really, really, as someone that doesn't do databases at all, it was really, really hard.
Yeah, I know. I apologized at various points for the fact that this might not be your thing if you're not into databases, but I hoped it might appeal to some people who were and who could give some feedback on the way forward, perhaps some suggestions or just, you know, some comments to the effect that, yeah, you're not doing too badly, or this is the way to do it or something. So the show got a bunch of comments, some of which were mine commenting back to people. The first one was from Steve, who said, "Make it so. As someone who is also not formally trained in database administration, but nonetheless does quite a bit of database administration and development, what you've said and the conclusion you've drawn sound exactly right to me. I say, make it so." So I replied to that saying, "Thanks, Steve. I appreciate the comment. And we're looking into how we can incorporate such features into the database and modify all the code around it." So this was then followed by a comment by GWS, who says, "A series is the same thing as a tag. If you need to distinguish them, put another column in the tag table, then join across the episode. Then the join across the episode tag is the same." I think he put some chevrons in there which got eaten by the comment system, so it makes it read a little odd. But cross the episode tag linkage is probably what that means. To which I replied, "Series same as tag? ? I think you have a point, except that the series idea was originally designed to have two other significant attributes, a description and a public-private flag. The description is an arbitrarily long text field used to store HTML, which is displayed in the web page for shows that are part of the series. The public-private flag denotes whether the series is open to more contributors or not. Most modern series are public, but some historical ones are private. Changing the tag table to include these attributes to be used for series tags is not impossible, of course. It needs some thought. Thanks for the suggestion." And GWS came back and said, "Variable length columns like bar chart or clob, it's not one I know, should not balloon the size of your tag table just by adding them. Assuming a moderately sane DBMS, those large and sparse objects would be stored in a separate data structure. Think string pool, so you pay for what you use. By the way, my earlier comment was meant to say episode, left arrow, ep tag, right arrow, tag, but I used angle brackets and the little bit got swallowed by HTML, which is a damn nuisance. I hate it when that happens. I've been caught out by that many times."
I think clob might be character large object.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yes. Like I say, I'm not that. I know I'm a sort of a self-taught database person, so my knowledge is limited. So but it's a learning experience. I got
that's a kind.
Yeah, there's a comment from Brenda J. Butler. "I'm new to HPR. Sorry if I make comments that show ignorance of how you do things. Please point me to resources. I'll be happy to read up. I'm not a big DB expert either, but like you, have used some DBs and have a little experience. also a bit of experience making a couple of database-backed websites. I like the idea of the third design of tags. I would also change the APR episode intake process to make any new tags in the new format have a cutover date time after which all the new entries in the database use the new tagging scheme. Populate the new tags tables and not the old tags fields. In fact, even remove the old tags fields to avoid confusion about which set of tags is the right set. That way you only have to do that, populate the new tags fields from the old tag fields step once at cutover time. You keep a copy of the old site and update it for a while until confident that the new site works properly. I don't know how the HBR site is served. I got the impression from your series that it's static pages generated from a DB. Perhaps you generate a new set of pages when a new episode is added to the database. I think you cannot go this way if you want to use that query you developed. What other shows have at least one of the tags that this show has? Or at least it would be difficult to implement. Can I read somewhere about the way the website is served, the tech stack, etc.? Is there a public repo for the code? Read only acceptable. Thanks for all of your great extensive show notes. Really appreciate it. Wow, that's quite a comment. I replied to this, tags and series, thanks GWS. It wasn't so much the storage issue I was referring to, nor the logic of the suggested change. I do like what you're proposing though. Sorry you got bitten by this crappy comment system. I said to Brenda, thanks Brenda, thanks for your comments. There's a GitLab instance with a repository which holds some of the public code. I gave a link to that. Your suggestion for the transition from the old to new tag system is pretty much what I had in mind. We haven't yet discussed all the issues amongst the admins. Ken says janitors, the HBR janitors. The site is not static, although there have been discussions about making it so. I take your point that there's a conflict between having a static site and offering tag query features, though. So quite a lot of comments on that one.
Yeah, David, the comments were pretty interesting. We're pretty interesting here, and even though I didn't understand it very much, it appears that there's a lot of people out there that really do get into that.
Yeah, I think so. It's I hope that might be the case. That there might be some people who would find that was fun and would come in with comments. So I'm very happy that happened.
It's one of the major benefits of this community, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So moving on then, show 2271, Raspberry Pi 0W. And this was Tony Hughes again. And he's talking about the new Raspberry Pi 0W single board computer released on the 28th of February. And he does a nice review of it, which he was very quick getting this out, actually. I think he posted it just days after the 0W came out. So good for you, Tony. That's excellent. So I thought it was good of you. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. That he got it and got it powered in that birdhouse, and it's taking pictures of the eggs in the birdhouse and sending back his sensor data to his house. Was pretty interesting on that too. Yeah. Now that totally amazing that he was able to do that. I didn't really understand how he got power out there to that birdhouse.
I'm not quite sure how he's done that. No, it's something I'd like to do. I also have two 0Ws, one of which is currently actually running a camera which is looking out the window. But I've got a bird feeder. I'd like to keep the thing next to, but how would you? Yeah, power is the issue. You'd need a lithium-ion battery.
Maybe
or
solar
power. Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Yeah, that would be cool.
You think it'd be enough? You think you could get a big enough panel and keep that battery charged?
I don't think they draw very much. I still haven't bought a single board computer, mostly because there's so many of them in this episode added to my confusion about which one to get. But when I was looking at the specs, I think you could charge a battery with a solar panel and go pretty easily with that, even a small one.
Yeah, I don't know for certain, but that was the way I was hoping to go. I would quite like to get some close-up shots of birds feeding or something like that. I don't get much of any great interest, but still, good pictures. It's worth having. It's a fun thing to do.
Well, like Ken would say, old basement full of those Singapore computers. So one day I'll do a show about them. But this W, people are making stuff. It's a very exciting one. People are making stuff from it. I saw something about using an iPhone 5 keyboard, and they were making a PDA out of it and stuff. Fantastic little device.
It's a lot of possibilities for that. It's a great machine for all sorts of things like that. Yeah, absolutely.
I think you just volunteered too, so let's put that on the record.
Yep. More shows, please, more shows. So we had one comment on this show from Droops, who said, "Very cool. I'm really excited to finally get my hands on one of these little ones. My kids and I have built several projects with my full-sized ones. I want to teach a class next year using Raspberry Pis." So that is very cool. I'd like to see what he produces. Droops is he's a teacher. I think he changed jobs recently, but he's certainly done shows for HBR about some of the projects he and his class has done. Okay, next one then is 2272, and this is from Only Half the Time. We haven't heard from him for a while, I think. And it's entitled, "In Which Our Hero Takes 4 Hours to Install Hyper-V Server 2012. And it's a tale of woe, which boils down to using the wrong sort of RAID on a server, a key server, as far as I can gather. It was a very detailed episode with some amazingly detailed notes, which is wonderful. And it was very well presented, I thought.
Yeah, the delivery here was fantastic. And I've got to admit, when he first led into the bit about RAID 0 early in the episode, my stomach dropped. Definitely gave me a little anxiety listening to him initially. This is fantastic. If the other episode about Plan 9 and whatnot is the embodiment of what we ought to have, I think this one is a continuation of that. The hacker topics, the technical topics with this wonderful delivery, dramatic delivery was just fantastic. In fact, when I was listening to it, I was in my lodge, and we were having an open house, and I was sort of sitting in the corner laughing to myself, and I'm afraid I may have ran some people off laughing at his commentary, but yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, he did it really well. You really felt you were there with him as he was dealing with all these issues. Yeah. Well,
I really, you know, next to the Plan 7 one, I mean, this one was the month. And you know, it goes right into what I do at work and stuff. And you'd be surprised. People really do make that mistake with the zero a lot. And then you have to go and have the fix it. And his delivery, golly, 3 gold stars for delivery. That was such, he must have prepped that thing for a really long time.
Yes. Yeah, he did a fantastic job there. It's we used to run RAID 0 at the university I worked at on a box that ran the Usenet news service, because it's a striped thing, isn't it? I think because Usenet news is very, very heavy on disk, and I think it was done for that. But isn't there a RAID level that where you do a RAID 1 on top of that? Is that RAID 10 or something like that? I think it is, isn't it? But yeah, still. It's a sort of mistake that you can imagine somebody making. There was one comment on this show from Steve, who said, "Been there, entertaining episode. I have so been in situations similar to what you've faced. Thanks for sharing." So the next show was from Neuroshades, whose handle the eSpeak cannot deal with at all. And he was talking about fountain pens. I know that Mirashades is into fountain pens, so it was great to hear his review of pens, paper, ink, and so forth. I'd really like to hear more on this subject and from him if he cares to do more.
It's classic old tech. That's what it is. It's old tech.
Yeah. I think so. It's becoming more popular. It's quite cool in certain circles now, I think.
Interesting, Dave. You know, I went to Burbigan the other day and had a presentation with the young people, and they started going back to moleskins and carrying books and writing stuff down. It's really, really coming back.
I know.
Must admit, I use a paper agenda, so I'm one of the ones stuck in the past.
There's nothing wrong with that, though. Both my kids are both, like I said, in their 20s, but they're both nuts about pens and stationery stuff. My son's fountain pens, my daughter not so much, but yeah, there's I think a fair number of their friends too are into this sort of thing. I think it's just cycles of whatever it is, fashion or something. So we had two comments on this one. One was from Droops, who has done a show on fountain pens, and he says, fountain pens, awesome, which is a great comment. And I commented pretty much as I've already said, great show, we need more on this subject. I enjoyed this show a lot. Thanks for talking about pens, ink and paper. I think we need more shows on these subjects. Maybe there are more enthusiasts in the HPR community who'd like to contribute. So I don't know if that's the case, but it would be good if there is. So the next one was 2274 from JWP. First Microsoft Surface Pro Ubuntu 1604 dual boot. So you recorded this from the car, I think you said, didn't you, JWP? It was, good for you.
I was in the car going up to Amsterdam, so I was in the car for a long time, and I just figured out how to do it on the iPhone. But I'm actually using the Mumble now on that very laptop now, that Surface with Ubuntu and the Mumble. So I'm doing it now. It's happening. I can't remember the last time I booted into Windows with it. So
that's amazing. That's really interesting. I've certainly heard good things about this device, but I've not been driven to get one myself. But yeah, you said it was good for watching movies and stuff, which I thought was intriguing.
The Surface has a great screen. I got the idea from that guy Noah at Jupiter Broadcasting. He had done one, and so I went and bought the original Surface Pro, and it wasn't an issue at all. I just had to use some UEFI stuff, and it booted. It's just like a normal x86 thing, and the pen works, and everything works with 1604, no special anything.
Very good. Yeah, that's quite impressive. There was one comment from Windigo who said, very interesting possibility. I didn't realize that installing any kind of Linux on a Surface was a possibility. Whole new category of hardware to repurpose. Thanks for another great episode.
Yeah, and did I hear you say you were recording this with the Bluetooth interface in your car?
Yes, on my Apple, yeah. So I pressed the voice memo. I told Siri to go to the voice memo, and she said, yeah. And then I started talking through my car speaker, and it worked. It sounded really good in the car. It had a little bit of wind sound when I uploaded it and everything. But it worked off the Bluetooth speaker in the car, or microphone in the car.
Well, I think that's great. I think it really goes to show that you can record episodes just about anywhere. I use a little Rockbox to record mine, little Sans Eclipse Zip, and I had never thought about
We're losing you, Christopher. You've gone off.
Yeah, it's interesting that you said Rockbox, because I'd really like to see more Rockbox stuff, because you can get $6, $3, $4 MP3 players now off of Amazon. I really wish that someone would manufacture one with Rockbox on it, right there for $6.
Yeah, I really agree with that. I've got a bunch of Sansa clips and clip zips and Sansa fuses and stuff, which I've bought secondhand just so I can run Rockbox on them and keep them going. But a lot of the more recent devices, nobody's ported Rockbox to it, so that's a great shame. Could do with more of it. I think you're very right. Just got a message from Christopher saying,
yeah,
he's got
talked to me.
Power problem.
Or actually, Mumble talked to me. Yeah, Christopher's got lost power, so now he's the. Now that reusable battery would really come in handy.
Absolutely, yeah. What a shame. He was, when we started, he was suffering from a really heavy storm in his part of the world. So Maybe that's the consequence of it.
From his accent, I think he's from North Carolina or somewhere around there. I'm not for sure.
I forgot to ask him where he's based, but I bow to your knowledge in that one.
Well, he said lodge. So lodge is something that you would do maybe out west. I don't think you do lodges out east anywhere. So maybe he's out west somewhere, you know, at a lodge.
Oh, you can hear anyway. Us. Arkansas, he says.
Arkansas, okay. they have lodges in Arkansas, really.
Okay. Anyway, thanks, Christopher, for joining us. It's been really cool. So, yeah. Anyway, let's press on then, shall we, JWP? We're up to 2275, and this call entitled PenguinCon 2017. It's from Ahuka, and this is Ahuka, who is the who runs the technical track at this conference, and he's talking about the content of the conference and so forth, which is, I think it's just finished, has it? Or maybe it's ongoing right now. 28th of April, I think, was it started. It might still be ongoing at the moment, actually, but he's been involved in this for a while, but he said this is his last time running the technical track. So, but it sounds really cool. Cory Doctorow was one of the speakers, I heard him say, and some amazingly interesting stuff in the lineup.
Yeah, it's always good. You know, you know me, Dave. I'll take off and I'll drive anywhere to get updated on any kind of tech. But Ahuka, he really, I mean, he had that LibreOffice series, and now he's technical lead on one of these conferences. He's really getting out there and doing some stuff.
Oh, he is. Yeah. He's an impressive guy. He's doing a lot of stuff. And we've thanked him over and over for his LibreOffice series. It's been brilliant. So, that was good. It was interesting to hear about. And it's one of these things I listen to and think, wow, I'd love to be able to go to something like that. But expensive.
Interestingly, it was Ahuka that really, Mishaela, my wife, I was on the Bluetooth speaker at the house, and he was talking about LibreOffice. And so he went into this really long talk about how to do PowerPoint on LibreOffice. And we were always trying to find a computer that would run Office so she could do like a PowerPoint or Excel or whatever. And she completely, after she heard him talk about it, she completely switched right there and downloaded it, and we didn't do the Microsoft thing anymore.
That's very cool. That's a great story. I'm sure he'd be delighted to hear that. Yeah, well done. Okay, let's move on to 2276, Tunnels and Trolls and Dungeon Delvers from Klaatu. And he's again talking about another game book series. Tunnels and Trolls is, I think he said, is a more accessible alternative to Dungeons and Dragons. And Dungeon Delvers is a simplified version of D&D. But these are game book type things that sound very cool.
The first series was about the single player one, right? And having been all over the world, and the single player one was really interesting. And this was a little harder for me to follow, but I sort of got it. It was sort of like if you didn't want the detail of Dungeons and Dragons, and you could still sort of play by yourself because it was a book, and you could read it and take turns with it. So it seemed pretty interesting. I wish children would play this instead of the PlayStation.
Well, I know. It's interesting you say that. Like I said earlier on, my daughter's into D&D. She's heading off to Canada next month to help out with some work there. And she was saying to me earlier, what shall I take to read? I need something to sort of entertain myself. I don't know whether something like this would suit her. As you say, it's a good thing to get youngsters into.
Yeah, you might want to look on eBay and see if somebody's selling that for a pound or two.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's something to be researched, I think.
Yeah, yeah. You cut out a little bit, Dave. But yeah, I don't know if you heard me, but maybe you should, maybe before she goes to Canada, look on eBay and see if you can get her a little game for a pound or so.
Yes, yes, indeed. I did get most of that, actually, but are we having a few problems with this, with Mumble, I wonder? I don't know. Hopefully not. But anyway, let's press on.
I mean, you sound crystal clear, buddy. Crystal clear. Like, oh, you're good. Right here in my room.
You sound very good, actually. Just been one or two little hiccups, but I don't know. I think we're doing good. So let's go on to show 2277, which is from Mirror Shades again, and he's talking about OuterNet and other projects. And the gist of this is systems or facilities that provide free internet access by alternative methods. He's talking about Project Loon, which is a Google project, which I've heard about, which sounds most intriguing. There's Facebook's internet.org, which is coming for some criticism, I believe. I don't know the details. And there's OuterNet, which I'd never heard of, which sounds most interesting. So it, it's an interesting subject. I'd definitely like to learn more about.
Well, I don't know about the free internet, but there's this company called Endless now, and I looked at some of their PCs, and what they do is they build PCs, and one of the things that they do is sell these cheap little ARM PCs to Texas prisons and Texas, and I have a lot of offline content, Wikipedia, make custom content. So it's sort of an alternate internet, and Endless, they make very, very inexpensive PCs. General Bacon is advising them now. And so it's sort of an alternate internet kind of thing.
Wow, that's again another intriguing idea. Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah. I remember there's been various comments about this type of thing in the past, but I've not really followed it in great detail. But yeah, I must follow some of these links and see if I can learn more about it, the subject in general. There were two comments on this one. Low Tech Morgellon commented, OuterNet user, said, "Hi, enjoyed your episode. I've had an OuterNet receiver up and running for a few months now. It's definitely a neat project. My biggest issue is with the $9 chip. It's always locking up or powering off. I'm planning to switch back to the old OS and a Raspberry Pi for stability. The $9 chips are now impossible to find, so the OuterNet guys are working on their own dedicated hardware that includes the processor and SDR all on one board. It's currently codenamed Dreamcatcher. I'll try and sit down tonight when I get home and record a companion to your episode and give a full review of my experience with the OuterNet." I look forward to hearing that. The chip, the OuterNet device is built around the chip, as I understand it. And Mirror Shades replies to that saying, "Sounds awesome. When I recorded this, I was hoping someone out there who had more experience with any of these could shed some more light on them for the rest of us. I've been considering getting one of the kits, but I've too much going on right now. Looking forward to your episode." So next was me again, 2278, some supplementary bash tips. I got in this idea.
You got some fans from this, man. Yeah. You read the comments. You got fans.
Oh, yeah, I know. I started doing this silly thing where I called these things some, then a word, bash tips. And I thought, oh, have something like more or some synonym of more. So I've nearly run out of them and I've reached supplementary. It's I really regret doing that, but never mind. So more about bash, and this one's about the expansion of path names. So it hopefully was useful to some people. Going on to the comments then, I had a comment from somebody who signed as unverified, who said, "You rock." I've been meaning to comment somewhere on the site about how great a resource the site is, but if I were nothing, but if it were, but if it were nothing but Dave Morris Reads the Man Pages, I'd gladly listen. Your attention to detail and calm mannerism is very pleasant, and that it happens that you cover the good stuff any Nix user needs to get a handle on is just perfect. When there is a lull, I'll go through them all again and again. Thanks for holding up far more than your end of the podcast. I'll try to break past the public speaking phobias and help with the tags too. Well, thank you very much. That's a wonderful comment. I have said in the past, it's just basically me reading the man pages. But the real answer is I'm trying to understand them and pass on what I've tried to understand, which I said more or less in my comment. So I said, thanks. That's a great comment. Thank you. My principle is to find stuff I don't understand or didn't in the past and share what I've learned to help anyone who wants to grasp whatever it is. I've just uploaded part two of this two-parter, so there's more to come. Smiley face. So not sure if that's a warning or what. Hope you managed to make episodes of your own. For my first one, I wrote notes for HPR, but also made myself a list of the points I wanted to cover and rehearsed the episode before the final recording. Whatever gives you enough confidence to do it. So I hope we get some shows from Unverified. So next is JWP again. So we're competing on the number of shows we're doing this month, JWP.
You know, 2279.
I know.
It was supposed to be the 1st of November. It was supposed to be the 1st of November, and I did it. But yeah, Ken, I carry this Intel stick with me around everywhere I go now.
Yeah, so
it lives with me in my backpack, and I mean, they couldn't have made a more awful device with the Canonical logo on it. Really, really. It's got 8 gigabytes of storage and 1 gigabyte of RAM, and it's got UFI on it, and oh man, it's just been a real pain. But it does this UMixem or UICM. He has all kinds of flavors for these things, and I downloaded the Ubuntu one, and now I got it to work.
Yeah, I was intrigued that you were talking about Pulse Audio and this Pulse Audio volume thingy control, PAVU control, to get it to work. That's quite useful advice in general, actually, about how to deal with sound issues. And in fact, this very day, I've run this to try and make sure my sound was working for this recording, and found it to be really cool.
If you've got Pulse Audio, that right click on the speaker brings all that stuff up. But if you don't have it, and then you're trying to use that Elucer mixer thing, then it doesn't work out so well. And of course, if I do a show and I've got a computer, I got to do Audacity because that's just the easiest way for me to do it because that's what I learned how to do these things on. So I figured it out. So now it can be a desktop too.
That's very cool, actually. Yeah, yeah. So you've got another show coming up which introduces this device, I guess, is it? And this one was really meant to be a follow-on to the first, and they've now gone in the wrong order. So
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, but Ken, grab my, you know, because I really wanted to, you know, I didn't see you at FOSDEM this year, but I saw Ken, and I was like, well, you know, I've got to take 15 minutes for Hacker Public Radio at least once a month, and get this going, and get this going. So I try to do the first Monday of every month, put a show into the queue for the rest of the year, and then Ken ran out of shows, and he grabbed my one for November.
That's a shame. Anyway, I don't think it's spoiled anything. I'm sure I'll be looking forward to hearing more about this CompuStick device. So shall we move on to the last show, and the last 2280?
Yeah, sure. We'll move on. Mishaila just came home from the play.
You okay to stay here then, JWP? Or you going to move on?
No. She just came home. A precious Fluffy came home from the musical in Stuttgart. So I'm still here. Let's do the last one. Lenovo X61 Part 2. That's a great show, by the way.
Yes. This is again Tony. And this time he's telling us his the whole process of buying these things and getting. He goes to an auction place where he gets this sort of kit, which I think is very impressive. I don't know of anywhere like that near where I live, but he's doing amazingly well.
I mean, the key, if you're going to do this, people, really, really, it's exactly what he did, right? Go and get an SSD. You'll just trust me, believe me. Go get an SSD and then check the battery and then get on eBay and get a replacement battery and you'll be beautiful with any of these things.
Yeah, he just seemed to have really worked it out very well and got something quite desirable. He says he's using it as his sort of main driver after reconfiguring it and so forth. The only thing was he needed to put Linux Lite on it to get the best out of it, which is interesting. Again, I'd like to
you put it as a SSD on it. You put an SSD on something, it changes everything.
I've got EEE PC in the cupboard, which I'd really like to. Used to run Crunchbang on it, but I'd really like to get something else on it and make it usable again. So useful points.
It only come with SATA though. You have to have an SATA port in there in your laptop somewhere. So a lot of those older ones, they have a PATA.
I'm not sure. I'll have to go and look at it. It might be too old to get a SATA connector. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. But yes. Well, whatever. It's good that this is a route that you could take if you want a portable, lightweight, cheap machine. Tony himself commented on this show saying, just an update, I needed a replacement non-OEM battery for one of the X61s I have with a totally dead battery. And it's something you have to factor in when you're buying stuff from auction.
Yeah, that's why I said SSD and a new battery.
Yeah.
So just go ahead and do it from the very from the get-go, and it'll be much better. And that, and you can get for instance, I don't carry a power supply in my backpack anymore. I have one at home and one at work, and that's it. That's it, because I bought one on eBay for 4 euros and put it at the office.
Yeah, that's good. That's a great way to do things. Anyway, Tony's saying that he managed to get a. I won't read this in detail because he's basically saying that he's got a replacement battery, and he's saying pretty much what you were saying, that it's given new life, new SSD and battery, and it cost him £93 to do all of this. He might be able to get it cheaper, and he's got a very, very functional machine as a consequence. So that's very cool.
I don't know if you've heard of the Pine, Dave, the Pine 64 laptop, the $89 one that's out there. So I would almost want to get Tony a Pine 64 and have him compare that old IBM with the Pine 64 thing and tell me which is better.
Yeah, I know. It's interesting what's happening in this sort of area, isn't it? Things are sort of shrinking and becoming lighter weight and everything. So yeah, it's intriguing.
Very, very, very much so. Very much so. Well, that looks like the last episode. So this is my first time doing the news, and hey, I really appreciate Christopher from Arkansas coming on too. He sounds like he's super, super smart.
Yeah, he's done some great shows for us and stuff. I know he's a very knowledgeable guy. We do have a few more comments that we need to look at. Are you going to be able to stay around for them? Because what happens is people comment.
Sure, they commented.
Go on.
I just don't know where they are.
Yeah. Okay. I'll tell you in a moment. What we need to do is there have been various extra comments added to shows that were released earlier on in the year. And but the comments were added during April, so we need to go and just look through them. You'll find them in the notes that I pointed you at. There, there's a list of comments this month in the show notes for this particular episode.
Okay, so I'm at the HBR 2281 Community News for April 2017.
That's right. scroll down past the table of shows and you'll see a list of comments. We've dealt with the second block, but we need to just check out the first block.
Okay, so it says 14 comments on 8 previous shows.
That's right, yeah. So we had an extra comment on 2178, which was called Dice Mixer, and it was from Klaatu. And it was Klaatu himself who replied to 5150, who'd made the comment about tin horn, the expression tin horn come from, that it referred to a gambler. But Klaatu says, I'd never heard of that one, 5150, I like it. As for me being a good salesperson, I think no one has ever accused me of that before. And we have show 2212, Meanderings, Cyberpunk and the Minidisc by Kuvmo. And we had a comment from somebody called 1F, anti-hacker. Thanks for the episode, loved it. I consider, they're talking about a manufacturer.
Minidisc.
Yes, they're talking about Minidisc, yeah, but that... it was S asterisk I was puzzling over. They're talking about a manufacturer whose initial letter is S. It's hostile towards hackers. So while some of their innovations are interesting, I'm done with anything carrying the S asterisk name. I still have a PS3 collecting dust, and that was my final straw. When they take hackers and makers to court just for trying to do cool and interesting stuff, they show just how anti-maker they are. They have the track record to prove how poor their treatment of the user community is. Remember Beta versus VHS? Remember Memory Stick? Long history of failed cool stuff. Sometimes it's difficult to put these things down as they're so cool, but on principle, I put them down now.
I don't know if I totally agree with that, because you have to understand in the last 15 to 17 years, Japan went through a depression that was very similar to what America went through in the 40s. And so these Japanese companies, to protect their IP, and the things are really, really tough in Japan right now.
Yeah, I guess so, but it's... It just seems so restrictive, some of these practices. I think, what was it? Things like the PlayStation that you could run Linux on at one point, and that was pulled.
The thing was
no good reason.
If you could run Linux on it, that meant that you could get into that PlayStation network, and you would not have they didn't have any control of if you had updated your Linux image or not. And then they could get sued because you were on their PlayStation network with a hacked Linux box.
But weren't people buying them by the hundreds? Was this the device that you could then network and make a really powerful cluster out of? Was that the PlayStation 3?
Exactly.
Yeah. And the universities were doing this.
Well, exactly. My son, we sold his. The guy in Greece bought his. And the guy was like, has it ever been connected to the internet? And we said, we didn't know. And the guy was like, I need it for a desktop. So he needed a 20 euro desktop. And it had been connected to the internet, so it didn't work out for him. And we gave him his money back and let him keep the device. But that people use ones that have not been connected to the internet for desktops down in developing places.
Yeah. Anyway, it's... We'll leave that there, I think, and skip on to the next one. So the next was 2236, which was Be Easy's show on hoarding Raspberry Pis. He was talking about what he was doing with a bunch of Raspberry Pis he had. And there was some humor around the fact that the speech synthesizer pronounced P-I-S, the plural of pie, as piss. So I said,
yeah, I mean, he's got an addiction that everybody, that quite a few of us had.
It's I'd have added an apostrophe, I said, to the plural of pie, but it's generally thought to be wrong, even though eSpeak then pronounces it in the non-urinary way. I've seen someone suggest it be raspberries pie, but that seems silly. Mike Ray comes back and says the apostrophe is definitely wrong, But as a screen reader user, this is a thing I struggle with constantly when writing pages and blog posts. Writing PIS definitely gives the pronunciation that is undesirable. Maybe it would have been easier if Edwin Upton hadn't made the mistake of calling it a PI, P-I, instead of a P-Y. The PI part was supposed to be short for Python, but hard to believe he got it wrong. That's interesting, yes. Anyway, I think that it's good that comment thread is really pretty much dead now, I think. Then we have 2249, which was New Year episode 3, and there was comment 3 from Dodd Dummy, who variously writes his name with 4 or 3 D's in it. New episode title, Conspiracy Gate. It's just commenting that this show was something else. I didn't realize there were so many conspiracy wonks in the group. Regarding the 100% figure on Scotland voting to remain, I think he was referring to 100% of the areas, not actual voters. I assume Ken's quote with all 32 council areas remain confirms that. Frank comments, Windows actually supports the always-on top function. It just has no GUI means of activating it. But some programs use it, most prominently media players. There are third-party tools which make it available globally, such as ActiveAid, written by the staff of a German computer magazine, C-T. A quick installation guide, English installation guide is at, and there's a URL, ActiveAid. Also brings other Linux goodies such as drag a window with Alt plus LMB. So this was a lot of discussion about all manner of things on this particular show. And these are a couple of things that have been picked out. It seems like a long time ago now.
Yes, definitely.
So we have 2253, How to Make and Use a Stencil by Ina Biener. Have I pronounced that right? Yeah, I think so. Not a German speaker.
I think so.
Yeah. Hold on, I'm just finding the comment 9. So this was her first show, I've lost myself here. Yeah, Michael says, thank you, nice episode, Bina, and congratulations to your first HBR contribution. And she replies, at all, thank you all for your comments. This is really encouraging. And RTSN says, good show. I just want to say I really enjoyed this episode. We'll try to make my own someday. Good episode, and I hope to hear more from you in future, which I echo. I thought it's a great first show. She obviously has got a lot of interesting things to say.
I thought it was a really good show. It was one of the first ones that I got after getting my iPhone and starting to listen to the shows again.
Yeah, it just goes to show that HBR is good for all manner of stuff, you know. Making a stencil, what's that got to do with hackers? Well, you know, it does. It depends on your definition, but it's certainly of great interest, I think.
Well, I really think with the show, Dave, that in the last 3 or 4 years, especially with the PI, that it's really turned into a maker's kind of thing. If it doesn't matter if so any kind of tech maker or philanthropy kind of thing, libraries, charitable things, you get all kinds of things. I don't know if you remember, I did one on the founders of PayPal also do a charitable thing where you can donate to like small businesses in India or someplace, and they'll just on your $5 loan for 7 years.
I don't remember that. Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah, I did a show about that. I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, maybe. It's interesting. I think that it's really taken off mostly because of what's gone on in the PI, because it's really turned the world into a maker kind of thing. So Stencil is a maker thing that you would that. Goes right along with, you know, whatever you would do with the PI, same mindset, same thing with the phishing thing, you know, it's sort of a maker kind of thing.
Absolutely, you know? Yeah. That's what I love about HBR personally. I don't think there should be any thought of restricting what comes out. Whatever you feel is appropriate.
That's why I say it's a sort of a maker community. We're making it's from the Raspberry Pi sort of thing, sort of mindset.
Yeah.
To make, we always make something. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's good. So we're nearly at the end of this block. 2254, which was an introduction to model rocketry by Steve Sainer. We read one of these comments last time because we last recorded on April the 1st. So let's move on to comment two. Comment two was from Rowan. Ah, the memories. Hi, I was thinking about your show last night and the memories of building model rockets as a kid. There was a hobby shop near my home, and at one point it had a row of model rockets, motors, starter kits, etc. One of the most exciting times was building a two-stage rocket that used either C or D motors. I remember the thrill of watching the two stages go off and then chasing it across the fields as the wind caught the parachute on its return to Earth. Thanks for a great episode. That's great. That's a nice idea. That's a really nice memory. That's it was a cool show too.
That show was probably the best of the. It may be, it's a long time till the end of the year, but I'm willing to bet when we do the yearly review that that's going to be a top three show.
Yeah. It's a gem, a real gem. Do you want to do any of these comments, JWP? I've been sort of hogging them. If you want to step in and do any, you're very welcome.
Sure. Hold on just a second. Let me go back to the main screen. So it's after Rowan commented, there was one called NSTR.
That's right.
And he did an exclamation point, and then he said, "Thanks for a wonderful show on a subject I had no idea could be so interesting. I hope to hear more of this. Keep it up."
Cool. Yeah, absolutely. I think we all agree with that. So I'm hopping between tabs here. So the next one was 2255, which was me.
Me too. Hold on. I'm using the pen, so it's a little slower for me.
You're on the surface, so it's a little bit. Yeah. We're talking here about 2255, the good ship HPR, which was my show, and there was a seventh comment added to it. Scroll. So the seventh comment was from Dog Dummy.
From Dog Dummy, he said, "Dot." It's DOD Dummy, not Dot Dummy. It's DOD, Department of Defense. He's a Department of Defense Dummy. That's what he is, a DOD Dummy. Department of Defense.
Okay.
So I'm thinking the episode should be something like sticky notes that forums keep at the top for reference. So I'm thinking that he listens to that in some military office somewhere in the world. He listens to Hacker Public Radio somewhere.
The fact that his last name is Dodd could be a clue, but I may be wrong.
Okay.
It's a good thought, though. So the last one was 2259 mini discs, a response to HBR 2212 from John Culp. And we're looking here at comment four. And comment four was from Kuvmo, who I think did the first episode. He said, mini disc. John, great episode. Perhaps we can get the powers to be link. What? These as a series. Oh, yeah. Okay. He's asking if we can link these as a series to entice others to produce more. As a failed light wheel mechanic, I love the truck episodes, he's saying to John, who's done a few.
I have a mini disc too. So I could do a mini disc show maybe. So maybe there'll be a third mini disc thing. We could do a series.
Yeah. That would be cool. It's a fascinating subject. Those are great devices, I think. So yeah, very good.
Yeah. But remember, Sony did it, and the other guy didn't like Sony, man. But I really love that particular technology.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. So we traditionally zoom through the mail to the mailing list at this stage in the game. So we can do that fairly quickly, I think. Let me find the tab. So the mailing list is linked off the notes. It's actually before the comments. Sorry, I took my finger off my press to talk there. and we had a series on HBR promos, a thread on HBR promos, where Ken said, "Hi, all in today's community news, there was a discussion on getting more hosts to the network, and there's a need for new promos." I'll zoom through these really quickly. He's asking if anybody can help preparing an HBR promotional video. This is HBR. And we got a reply from Droops, who said, "I'm game to help." And then he followed up a while later with a long message where he says, here's a suggested script for such a thing. He's suggesting that if we made a video with different people telling one story, with each person only saying one of the sentences, and he's got a list of things, which is a great idea, actually. I'm not quite sure how that would work, because everybody then needs to have some sort of video capability, don't they? But being old and stuck on my ways, I doesn't immediately appeal to me, but I'm sure others will see it very differently. And there was a comment which seemed to be a little bit out of sequence. David T was asking about a podcast that ended with guided hacker meditations, which doesn't ring any bells.
Yeah, I saw that. I didn't get what that was really. I saw it, Dave. I didn't get what it was. So.
Hopefully he'll come back and explain what he was asking. And we had a comment.
I hope so.
I had a comment from an email from Kuvmo in this thread, where he says about this business of doing a show, "I love this idea and would be willing to submit something." And he says, "On a related note, I noticed one of my fellow victims on the tank game BZ Flag had his motto set to his DeviantArt site, and it made me look. I immediately set my motto to hackpublicradio.org, hope to drive some views," which is, it's an interesting idea. Just sort of, you know, wearing an HBR t-shirt or a badge or something, or those sorts of things as a way of getting the word out, I guess.
I think one of the things in relation to that, I think that somehow either we ought to do a crowdfunding for Ken so that he can go to an event one time and not have to have a microphone in front of him and just be the Hacker Public Radio guy and talk to people talk to people about it, right? I talk to people about Hacker Public Radio and stuff instead of always recording and stuff, that he could sort of be the Hacker Public Radio ambassador.
A lot to be said for that. I mean, we have done that to some extent at AltCamp, you know, where we set up a table.
We didn't do the Birds of a Feather this year. Actually, I have to get my ticket and see if I can still get a ticket to get in. And I don't know if you can still get into AltCamp or not. I know that it's happening, but I'm a little late on all preparations for it.
Well, I would imagine it'll still open, and they don't tend to sell out that quickly. But I it's too far for me to get to, really. It's a big hassle of a place to get to from Scotland, so I'm not going to go, I'm afraid. So, but yeah, it would be nice.
That's two events in a row, Dave, that you missed. That you missed, man.
One thing.
I have to do this. How hard is it, Dave? I'm going to date myself here, man, but back in the 80s, I opened up a thing in a bank called NatWest. And how hard is it to go and get your money back then, to close your account with them? I haven't been there since the 80s.
I'm not sure what the status of NatWest is. I think it's been bought out by somebody else. I'm sure you could find out if you did a search for it, but it's probably been gobbled up by another bank. And you still have credentials.
Kent is close to Peterborough, and I opened the account in Peterborough, so I can go on the high street in Peterborough, go back to where the bank was, and I'm sure it'll probably work out.
Well, good luck, because all the banks around where I live are all closing, because, you know, who wants bank branches anymore when there's the internet? So, anyway.
Okay.
Should we just hop through these fairly quickly? We've got
yes, please.
I can't see them though.
Are they at the very bottom of the screen, or very bottom of the notes, or
if you look in the 2281, there's a link under the heading mailing list discussions, and it's just after the table of shows, and it takes you to Mailman on the Hacker Public Radio site, hackerpublicradio.org/pipermail, it says, etc., etc.
Okay, I'm down at the bottom where it says RSS feed, subscribe to the comments in the RSS feed, because I need to go back up. Still further down?
No, you need to be after the table of shows right near the top.
Okay, let me go back up to the top.
It's not in chronological order, I'm afraid. And while you're looking, I'll just mention that the next thread is about the amateur round table second try. And Michael, who's Mirwi in Germany, I think, is trying to organize setting everything up for another one of these roundtable talks. I won't read these out because really they're quite long. We have a reply from Steve Sainer, who is keen to do this as well, but it seems to have stalled a bit. April the 4th was this message, yeah. So hopefully they're going to manage
since I started subscribing to the mailing list. So I'm up at the very top, and I'm with the header now, and I'm at 2281 Community News for April 2017. So where do I click with my pen?
Scroll down to mailing list discussions underneath that table. And you'll see there's a link at the end of that, those paragraphs, just before comments this month. That takes you to the mail.
I see it now. So I click on the mailman?
Just click on that link there, and it'll take you to the threaded discussions for the link right at the bottom, the one that says http://hackerpublicradio.org/pipermail, blah, blah, blah.
So it says HPR archives when I clicked on that, and I got a bunch of HBR archives starting back at April 2017. So I would get just click on the thread thing.
Yep. I'm just walking through the message threads here. That's all I'm doing. I think we can zoom through this pretty quickly.
Okay. Yeah. So it's an amateur roundtable. How to proceed, yep. And then
the second message.
Try. And HBR Penguin series by Kevin O'Brien is next.
Yep. Kevin O'Brien says, can we have a series for PenguinCon? He has done loads of shows on this subject. And the answer was, yes, indeed, and it was created. Then we had the next community news stuff, and basically I was asking if anybody would be prepared to help. And a bunch of people commented, including yourself, JWP, and Christopher did, and we had problems with... later on with the fact that the Mumble server that I put in these messages has apparently gone away, hope temporarily, but maybe permanently. So we're actually using Honky Magoo's Mumble server today, which he kindly mentioned and let us access, and it's been fine. Everything's been going well. So anyway, you can read it, Fizz. There's not much.
I got it. It's great. Okay.
So I think we'll just call it at that point, shall we, John?
Man, I think we come to the end, I guess, now of the show.
So. I think we've done it. Yep. We'll call it quits.
Okay, so with the Mumble, I just have to press stop, right? And then it stops, and it'll tell me to save it, and then my Dropbox, you get it, right?
That's it. You don't need to send it to me. I will just ask for it if I need it. So if you can just stop it and make sure you have a copy of it somewhere available if I need it, then that would be fantastic. So thanks, John.
All right. Hey, I'll press the stop. Hey, no problem, man. Hey,
thank you for your
nice
help.
Nice talking with you. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.